The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Our first article starts in the wellness section. Should we all be cycling, sinking? The internet wants us to eat and exercise in alignment with our menstrual cycle. We investigated. This article is by Rosie Hopegood. Dip your toe into the world of women's health on TikTok, and it won't be long before you stumble upon an influencer earnestly espousing the benefits of cycle syncing. No, we don't mean the way your period synchronized with your college roommates after living together for a semester. Today, it's a method of eating and exercising in conjunction with your menstrual cycle, and it's a mammoth health trend. It's racked up more than 466 million views on TikTok, and fitness platforms such as Nike Training Club, Allo Moves, and Tonal have all incorporated it into their offerings. Proponents claim that cycle syncing comes with benefits, ranging from increased energy to better hormonal regulation. Cynics say that the science doesn't add up and that the impact of the method is measured heavily in anecdotal evidence. The term we first coined by functional nutritionist Alyssa Vitti, who laid out the method in her best-selling 2020 book, In the Flow, flow is spelled F-L-O. After being diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome, she did a deep dive into how our hormonal cycles impact our quality of life. I knew we must be missing something fundamental when statistics show that 80% of women will have a hormonal imbalance at some point in their lives, versus under 20% of men, she says. I started trying to figure out why women are struggling so much more profoundly. Her research led her to women's infradian rhythms. While all of us live with a 24-hour circadian rhythm, women have an additional internal clock, an infradian rhythm based on our 28-day menstrual cycle, which impacts everything from our reproductive system to our metabolism and our gut microbiome. We're used to working with our circadian rhythms, says Anna Hall, who founded the cycle syncing app Embody, that's E-M-B-O-D-Y, after struggling with premenstrual dysphoric disorder. We wouldn't wake up at 3 in the morning to go to work out, and similarly, we wouldn't plan to run a first marathon during our menstrual cycle. Here's how it works. The basic premise of cycle syncing is to tailor your nutrition and exercise routines to the 4 stages in your monthly cycle: menstrual, follicular, ovulation, and luteal. You can roughly work out what phase you're in by counting how many days ago your last period started, but with diligent tracking of your hormones, it's hard to know exactly. If you want to be precise, you can use ovulation test strips or a lab-grade hormone monitor like the MIRA analyzer. MIRA is spelled M-I-R-A. At the less accurate but easier end of the spectrum, you can try the Natural Cycles app, which uses your temperature to predict your ovulation. You can skip morning sessions by letting your Apple Watch or Aura, O-U-R-A, ring do the work. Once you have a sense of your cycle, you can try Vitti's app, MyFlow, which offers recipes and workouts, or Hall's app, Embody, which offers tips for each phase and lets you analyze your symptoms throughout the month. For the basic gist, here's a breakdown, organized by menstrual phase. Menstrual phase, days 1 to 7. Your new cycle technically starts the first day of your period. During this phase, your estrogen and progesterone hormone levels are low, says Stephanie Hack, MD, an OBGYN and the founder of health platform The Lady Parts Doctor. You might feel tired or uncomfortable. A study on professional soccer players found that 93% of them reported that being on their period negatively affected their performance. What to do? Well, you don't need an expert to tell you that this isn't the best time to be attempting a personal best on the running track. Things like yoga, stretching, and walking can be really beneficial during this phase, along with self-care, rest, and recovery, says Hack. Hal agrees. This is usually a time where we need more sleep, more rest, gentle movement, and comfort. What to eat? Hack recommends foods that are rich in iron to make up for the blood lost through menstruation. Things like lean red meat, poultry, fish, enriched cereals, and leafy greens. Now is also a good time to up your omega-3s by eating flaxseed, walnuts, or fatty fish like salmon and mackerel. This can help with inflammation and potentially with cramping and menstrual discomfort. Follicular phase, around days 8 to 13. This starts when your period stops. Your ovaries are growing follicles, one of which will release an egg. A lot of people say they feel their best and most like themselves during this time, says Hall. The bloating and discomfort are gone, and estrogen levels rise gradually. As they do, you're going to have more energy. What to do? The boost in estrogen makes this a great time to try lifting heavier weights. You can start to increase the intensity of your workouts. Think strength, training, cardio, HIIT, says Hack. Your body will be more responsive to building muscles, so lean into it. What to eat? VD recommends eating prebiotic-rich fermented foods during this stage, because they can help the body metabolize and break down estrogen. Reach for the 4 Ks, kimchi, kombucha, kefir, and sauerkraut. Ovulation phase, around days 14 to 17. Most women release an egg in the middle of their cycle, although exactly when varies. Ovulation itself lasts just 12 to 24 hours, but this phase lasts 3 days. What to do? As your estrogen surges and your testosterone levels also increase, your strength and endurance are going to be the highest during this phase. This is a great time for you to do HIIT or any challenging workouts you enjoy, says Hack. What to eat? Per VD, your metabolism is slower during ovulation, so you need fewer calories, she says. The upside? As a result of eating fewer calories, when you do cardio, you're actually going to use stored fat as fuel. Hack says that now is the time to fuel up on complex carbs like sweet potatoes, whole grain pasta, and quinoa. She also recommends eating more healthy fats such as avocados, nuts, and olive oil to support your hormone production. Luteal phase, days 17 to 28 plus. Once you've ovulated, your body starts to produce progesterone to get ready for a possible pregnancy. Hack notes that as levels of this hormone increase, you're more likely to feel fatigued and possibly bloated. According to Susan S. Khalil, director of the Division of Sexual Health at Mount Sinai Health System, the hormone also acts as an appetite stimulant. If you aren't pregnant, levels of progesterone and estrogen will plummet sharply, signaling to your body to begin a new cycle. Khalil notes that it's this sudden drop in hormones that can trigger mood fluctuations, especially in those who suffer from premenstrual dysphoric disorder. What to do? VD says that in this phase, studies show that the metabolism speeds up. Cortisol is higher, and you actually need 279 more calories per day. She notes that in order for you to burn fat as fuel, you'll want to go light on the cardio and heavier on strength training so that you can build lean muscle, use that stored fat as fuel, and keep your blood sugar in balance. What to eat? Cravings are very common during the luteal phase. Listen to them, says Hall. You're hungrier because your body is preparing for something big. Try pairing a craving food with something that's really going to help your body feel good. Is cycle syncing legit? In 2019, after the U.S. women's soccer team won the World Cup, word got out that coach Dawn Scott had adopted a cycle syncing approach to their training, prompting a surge in scientific interest. One recent study on female athletes showed that it's easier to build muscle at certain times of the month, while another showed that looser joints in the ovulatory phase may lead to an increased chance of injury. During this phases, VT recommends doing shorter 30 to 60 second segments of an HITT, and if any joints are an issue for you, modify any exercise that would put strain on those joints. Meanwhile, a study released in October showed that the volume and thickness of women's brains changes depending on where they are in their monthly cycle. But the research is new and the field is still emerging. A lot of the claims made in the more woo-woo corners of the internet simply aren't backed by science. I can understand why this method anecdotally makes sense, says Khalil. Many times, leading up to a period, patients will describe feeling low energy, feeling tired, getting more colds. And when we do hormone replacement therapy, when women are menopausal, patients describe feeling more energetic on the estrogen. But it definitely requires more dedicated research. There's also one giant caveat for many women of childbearing years. If you're using any kind of hormonal birth control, cycle syncing most likely isn't for you, because many methods may suppress ovulation and interfere with the four phases of your cycle. Hacks advice? Listen to your body. My thought is, if this is something you want to do, I don't see any harm in trying, she says. You might find your body responding well to the method, but I don't think it's something that you need to do to optimize your fitness. A lot of this is intuitive for women. We're heading over to one of Oprah's insider articles. Oprah on working through mom issues. Responding to your feedback from our recent conversation on the mother wound. And this article is by Oprah Winfrey. Hello, insiders. 2 weeks ago, we launched our The Life You Want class on the mother wound. And based on your feedback, it's really resonating. I just love reading your comments. Nick Rondinelli wrote that the class taught him a profound truth. The first people in our lives have a big impact on us, but how we heal from those early hurts is a journey we all share. No matter where we start from, we all look for ways to grow stronger. That is absolutely the intention of this class, to meet you where you are, whatever this relationship looks like for you, and offer a healing hand where it's needed. Your experiences run the gamut from insiders who are blessed with a great relationship with their mothers to others who have cut off their moms completely. Some insiders, like KRC1552, have worked to view a deeply challenging relationship with empathy. I chose forgiveness and acceptance of the way my mother was, and because of that, I was able to learn about her childhood and how she became who she was, she writes. Was my mother perfect? Absolutely not. Can I live knowing that she did the best she could, given the role model of a mother she had? Yes. If you haven't already, I hope you'll watch my interview with Brooke Shields about her struggles with her mom, then dive into our accompanying stories, including Martha Beck's guide to filling a mom-shaped hole in your life, and the tale of a writer who took her mom to therapy. And if your mother is a jellyfish type, constantly making tiny, painful comments, read our expert advice on how to soothe these stings and keep on swimming. Wishing you a blessed week, everyone. Here is another one of Oprah's insider articles. Oprah on the indelible lessons Japan taught her. And this is written by Oprah Winfrey. Hello, insiders. Well, I recently returned from a trip to Japan to see the cherry blossoms, a trip that I postponed from 2023 to now because we were waiting on the blossoms to be just right. And even though I waited till 2024, we still missed it by a week. Everybody said that for the past 5 years, the blossoms have always peaked between March 25th and 29th. Not so this year. It was cold, it was raining. And only on the last day in Kyoto did the sakura, what they call the cherry blossoms, reveal its delicate pink beauty. And I have to tell you that the third day into our 10-day girls' trip, I said to Gail, to Kirby, and to Ava, we're not going to get what we came for, so let's just lean into what we're going to be offered here because we're not going to get the blossoms. So we changed our perspective and ended up having a really glorious time. Because what Japan has to offer, let me tell y'all, it's sublime. As I say, I've never been before. It's awe-inspiring as a culture. The pride that people take in doing just the smallest tasks. The sense of serenity, of being fully present in every experience. Whether it's drinking a cup of tea. We went through a full tea ritual ceremony with one of the few women tea masters. Or if it's taking a bath. I finally met my match for bathing as a ritual. There's a whole process the Japanese have for doing that. They shower before entering the bathwater. There's also forest bathing. Walking through parks and going through forests is a regular habit for many people because they just want to take in every leaf, take in the moss, take in the trees. Beauty is present in the precision and preparation of everything they do, whether it's making a meal or making a bed. The streets were so clean, you could sit there and have a picnic. The people are so respectful of the past and the present. I felt a reverence for life from them in the simplest and most profound ways, and I left Japan vowing to be more reverent in my own daily doings. So I thank you, Japan. You taught me that the next time I want to go chasing cherry blossoms, I need look no further than my own backyard, and taught me an appreciation for presence and reverence that I will carry forever. And I hope that will be a lesson for all of you. Look no further than your own backyard. There are cherry blossoms everywhere. And since that time, I see them on the streets everywhere. They're everywhere. You don't have to go to Japan chasing cherry blossoms. Have a great week. So here's another article talking about the trip to Japan that Oprah took. It's in the culture and news section. Inside Gail and Oprah's unforgettable girls' trip to Japan. Gail was joined by Oprah, Ava DuVernay, and her favorite daughter Kirby for a trip to Japan. Take a look at their photos and adventures as told by your editor at large, and this is by Gail King. Of all the countries Oprah, Ava DuVernay, Kirby, and I have traveled, Japan has been unchecked on our bucket list until now. We traveled to 4 cities in 8 days, and saw shrines and sacred temples, ate delicious food, and of course we had to go on at least one hike. We wanted to take this trip because Japan is the type of destination that is packed with cultural pride and heritage. You can hardly visit a place deemed sacred and not learn something about the history and values of its people. Plus, we planned our trip around cherry blossom season. More on that below. Yes, the best part of traveling to this country and any other for me is the company. I'm lucky to see the world with my closest friend and daughter by my side. Read on below for my take on yet another successful girls' trip. So there's a couple pictures. One says making mochi. The four of them are sitting at a table with some plates and glasses. And the next one is a gentleman who is making food. Our first night in Tokyo, we went to a hibachi-style restaurant where the chef serves your food hot off the grill and hands it to you on a paddleboard. I was just amazed that the chef didn't need to write your order down, and he cooked while kneeling on the table. Part of the experience was helping. Oprah and I got to help make the mochi for dessert, where we pounded the dough with a long mallet. Let's just say we worked up an appetite. The next picture is one of the ladies taking a selfie of the group. Shibuya in Tokyo is the center of Japanese fashion, and the streets are lined with shops and crowded with people. Sound familiar? It's called the Times Square of Japan. And here, I thought I was getting away from the hustle and bustle. Ava, Kirby, and I walked the streets and did a bit of shopping. Ava, the director that she is, held her camera at a high angle to get a better view as we were walking through the crowds. Our group traveled more than 4,000 miles during cherry blossom season. We worked with travel guides and experts, and we were told that the last week of March is the best time for peak growth. And yet, due to some change in the climate, this was the first time in a long time when the cherry blossoms were late to bloom. Just our luck. We had a good sense of humor about it. It became a running joke to take photos of the cherry blossoms we saw in vases. Better than nothing. Tea steeped in culture. I didn't quite know what to expect out of a tea ceremony, but I knew it wasn't this. During the private ceremony at Tea House in Gogoguchi Temple, our host told us of the cultural history while demonstrating the ceremonial preparation of tea making. A full ceremony can take up to 4 hours, though ours was a shortened version. And there's a picture of Oprah and Gail drinking tea. Temples and structures and shrines, oh my! After Tokyo, the city we spent the most time in was Kyoto. We also visited Nagoya and Shima. Kyoto alone has hundreds of shrines and temples, and it made me think of how well Japanese culture preserves its history and its architecture. We couldn't help but take a photo each time we were near a building with elongated roofs. Livin' la vida local. It would be a rare occurrence to see the four of us together at a diner in the States, but when our guide, Simone, who is a member of Oprah's staff, suggested we get a taste of real authentic Japanese food, the type of food he used to eat as a child, we said we'd go. It was so authentic that there were no forks served in the restaurant, and so Simone, who is always thinking, had brought some from the hotel for Ava and I to eat with. We're not that good at using chopsticks. But boy, oh boy, was it worth it to stop for food. A hike and a waterfall. We would be remiss to travel to any place interesting while on vacation without taking advantage of an opportunity to hike, especially when traveling with Oprah. We made it to the top and were met with a beautiful waterfall. And there's a picture of the four of them on a trail with the waterfall off to the right. Sacred trees. We all know that Oprah loves trees, so continuing our hike in Kyoto, we had to visit a sacred tree and take in all of its splendor. The trees that are marked sacred are wrapped in straw rope blend called Shiminawa. Spectacular food. This was one of the highlights of our trip. The owners of Yasaka at Park Hyatt Kyoto opened up just for us at lunch. The food was so good that I still remember the meal now. Flounder, miso cod, truffle, yum. Moss garden. We visited Saihoji Temple, a famous moss garden in Kyoto. Just to think we almost didn't go because we had already seen so many beautiful places and thought it couldn't live up to the hype. But of course it did. I thought it was gorgeous. Time to update my screensaver. We took a tranquil stroll around the park. Many, many gates. We visited the Fushimi Inari Shrine, commonly referred to as the Temple of 10,000 Gates. We climbed and walked through the large orange torii gates and finally arrived at the huge structure. Sharp End. During the tail end of our trip, we passed through Osaka. Kirby and Oprah did some shopping for some Japanese knives, and I passed on the purchase because I really don't do much cooking. Cherry Blossoms Part 2. At long last, we did end up seeing just a bit of cherry blossoms in bloom on the very last day. That was a small cluster of them. There was a small cluster of them by the water, and we had to stop and take photos. This effectively ended our running joke of spotting flowers in vases, but we couldn't be happier to see the cherry blossoms for ourselves. And there's a picture of the four of them standing in front of a cherry blossom tree. Under wellness, we have the cancer screenings every young woman should get. These are the screenings you need to know about and the tests you should skip. This article is by Haley Levine. You were probably shocked when Catherine, Princess of Wales, announced that she had cancer, not only because of the rumors swirling around her in the weeks before, but because she's only 42 and seemingly the epitome of health. It's true that cancer in young adults is very uncommon. Only about 12% of all cases occur in people under the age of 50, according to the American Cancer Society. But cancer rates are increasing in this age group. A study published in 2023 in BMJ Oncology found that rates across the globe have dramatically increased in people under the age of 50 over the past couple of decades. There were 3.26 million early-onset cancer cases in 2019, an increase of 79.1% since 1990. Another study published this past January in JMA Network Open found that the incidence of breast cancer among women younger than 50 rose by almost 4% each year between 2016 and 2019. We've seen increases in all sorts of cancers, including breast, colorectal, pancreatic, head and neck, and reproductive cancers like ovarian and endometrial cancer, says Veda Giri, MD, director of the Early Onset Cancer Program at Yale School of Medicine. While it's not quite clear why this is happening, some of it may be due to lifestyle factors like being overweight or having obesity, being sedentary, drinking alcohol, and smoking, she explains. We're also looking at environmental exposures, as well as changes to people's microbiome or the mix of bacteria that makes up your GI tract. The good news is that screening tests are still key to catching cancer in the early stages, when it's most treatable. Here are the ones you should get depending on your age and other risk factors. Essential: HPV test. The American Cancer Society recommends that all women start at age 25, says Ahmedin Jamal. That's spelled A-H-M-E-D-I-N. The last name is J-E-M-A-L. Ph.D., Senior Vice President of Surveillance and Health Equity Science at the American Cancer Society. The test checks to see if you're infected with a high-risk form of HPV, the virus that causes cervical cancer. It's done the same way as a Pap test. Your doctor will use a special tool to scrape your cervix to remove cells for testing. It's worth checking in to see if your primary care provider offers the test. Otherwise, you can have it done at your OB's office or local Planned Parenthood center. Mammogram. In general, we recommend that all women at average risk of breast cancer start their annual screening mammogram at age 40, says Sherry Goldfarb, MD, a breast oncologist researcher and director of the Young Women with Breast Cancer Program at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City. The American Cancer Society also says that all women should begin screening mammograms every year between the ages of 40 and 44 until age 55, when they can discuss with their doctor whether to switch to every other year. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, about half of all women over the age of 40 have dense breasts, meaning it may be harder to spot breast cancer tumors on a mammogram, in which case your radiologist will note it in your report so you can get an annual ultrasound as well. Women who have a first-degree relative, meaning a mother, sister, or daughter with a history of breast cancer, should start their mammograms 10 to 15 years earlier than the age of the family member when they developed breast cancer, says Goldfarb. Colonoscopy. The American Cancer Society now recommends that people at average risk of colorectal cancer start regular screening at age 45. It was moved from age 50 a few years ago due to a rise in diagnosis in younger adults, says Robin Mendelson, MD, a gastroenterologist and co-director of Center for Young Onset Colorectal and Gastrointestinal Cancer at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City. Colonoscopies are generally recommended over other tests like stool tests, says Mendelson. A colonoscopy can not only diagnose colorectal cancer, it can also prevent it because it can find and remove potential precancerous polyps. Plus, if your stool sample tests positive for blood, you'll have to have a colonoscopy anyway. Your doctor may also offer a CT colonography, also called a virtual colonoscopy, which uses X-ray equipment to examine your colon and rectum. If the results are normal, regular colonoscopies are repeated every 10 years, while virtual ones are needed every 5 years. Talk to your doctor if you have risk factors such as an inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, or a family history of colorectal cancer. You may need to start colon cancer screenings earlier. Even under age 45, it's still important to be alert for symptoms of colorectal cancer. The most common sign among younger adults is rectal bleeding, according to a 2022 study Mendelson published in the International Journal of Colorectal Disease. If you notice any blood when you have a bowel movement, let your doctor know. Most of the time, it's not due to colorectal cancer, but it should always be evaluated, she says. Skin cancer screening. The most common types of cancer among all adults are non-melanoma skin cancers, known as basal cell and squamous cell carcinoma skin cancers, says Jamal. Women under the age of 50 are more likely to develop melanoma than any other cancer except breast and thyroid cancers, per the Skin Cancer Foundation. See a dermatologist once a year for a skin check, or more often if you have other risk factors like a personal or family history of skin cancer. You should also do your own at-home skin check once a month. You can get tips on what to look for here. Useful for some people, breast MRI. If you are at increased risk of developing breast cancer, talk to your doctor about the best age to start an annual mammogram and breast MRI. It could be as young as 20, says Goldfarb. Additionally, if you have a family history of breast cancer or a certain cluster of cancers like breast, ovarian, and pancreatic cancer, ask your doctor about genetic testing. This type of testing can help you know whether you need to make lifestyle changes, have more frequent screening, or take preventative action, which includes everything from taking medication to manage colorectal cancer risk to having a mastectomy to reduce the chances of developing breast cancer. Women at higher risk will usually be referred to a high-risk screening program, says Goldfarb, where doctors will assess your lifetime risk of breast cancer and determine whether or not you'll benefit from more intensive screening. Lung cancer screening. If you're between the ages of 50 and 80 and a current or former smoker, ask your doctor if you should have an annual low-dose CT scan to check for lung cancer. The American Cancer Society has guidelines about who can benefit from screening. See if you meet the criteria here. Skip it. At-home genetic tests. You've probably seen the direct-to-consumer genetic tests that promise to assess your risk for breast cancer. Problem is, the most common ones like 23andMe only test for a bunch of variants in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, and there are literally thousands of variants, says Geary. It can provide a sense of false reassurance. Full body MRI scans. Some MRI clinics advertise full body scans, claiming they'll examine you literally from head to toe for signs of cancer. But groups like the American College of Radiology don't recommend them. There's no evidence that they save lives or even pick up more cases of cancer than standard screenings. If you're worried about cancer, and let's face it, most of us are, your best strategy is to commit to a healthy lifestyle that includes staying at a healthy weight, getting plenty of exercise, and eating a healthy diet, stresses Geary. These three things could prevent over 40% of all cancers, says the World Cancer Research Fund International. Combine them with staying up to date on screenings, and you'll dramatically increase your chances of staying well for decades to come. So in the article I just finished, it talked about some other articles you could check out to help. One is to do with the skin check that says self-exams save lives, how to do a skin check. When caught and treated early, skin cancers are highly curable. And in the early stages of skin cancer development, you're the one with the best chances to see changes. Self-exams are a simple way to look at yourself with a new focus that can save your life. That's why we recommend that you check your skin head to toe once a month. If you're unsure of how to do a skin check or what to look for, see below for some easy instructions. What to look for. Because skin cancers appear in many shapes and sizes, it's important to know the warning signs associated with basal cell carcinoma, or BCC, squamous cell carcinoma, SCC, melanoma, Merkel cell carcinoma, MCC, and other rare skin cancers, and the precancer actinic keratosis, or AK. If you see something new, changing, or unusual, get checked by a dermatologist right away. It could be skin cancer. This includes a growth that increases in size and appears pearly, transparent, tan, brown, black, or multicolored. A mole, birthmark or brown spot that increases in size, thickness, changes color or texture, or is bigger than a pencil eraser. Learn the ABCDEs of melanoma. A spot or sore that continues to itch, hurt, crust, scab, or bleed. An open sore that does not heal within 3 weeks. You can learn about early detection at thebigc.org. A thorough self-exam requires the following simple supplies: a bright light, a full-length mirror, a hand mirror, two chairs or stools, and a blow dryer. Be sure to document your findings by writing them down on your phone to take pictures. So parts of this article were edited due to time. That main article also talked about lung cancer screening guidelines. So here is that little extra article. And the American Cancer Society recommends yearly screenings for lung cancer with a low-dose CT, LDCT scan for people aged 50 to 80 years who have smoked or used to smoke and have at least a 20-pack year history of smoking. A pack year is equal to smoking one pack or about 20 cigarettes per day for a year. For example, a person could have a 20-pack year history by smoking one pack a day for 20 years or by smoking two packs a day for 10 years. Before deciding to be screened, people should have a discussion with a healthcare professional about the purpose of screening and how it is done, as well as the benefits, limits, and possible harms of screening. People who still smoke should be counseled about quitting and offered interventions and resources to help them. People should not be screened if they have serious health problems that will likely limit how long they will live, or if they won't be able to or won't want to get treatment if lung cancer is found. We're moving on to the word of the week, neurodiversity. Everyone's brain works a bit differently. It's a beautiful thing. This article is by Casey Hurwitz. Maybe you've heard this term, a mashup of neurological and diversity, on TikTok or at your kid's pediatrician's office. Neurodiversity is an umbrella term for the wide range of ways people's brains work. Basically, every mind on the planet is unique, but ones that fall outside the dominant societal standard of cognitive processing can be considered neurodivergent, says Sarah England, a clinical neuropsychologist based in New York. This term is commonly used to describe autism, but it also encompasses ADHD, OCD, and dyslexia. While the flip side of neurodivergence is technically neurotypicality, these terms aren't synonymous with normal and abnormal. Being neurodivergent might mean you face more challenges when it comes to traditional learning techniques or social situations, but it could also mean you have distinct strengths in other areas. Using this more inclusive term is yet another way to celebrate our differences rather than demean them. Moving on to the relationships section. Is it really that bad to be picky, or should you settle for pretty good? A single woman reports from the dating trenches. Article by Casey Hurwitz. Dating is hard enough as it is, but do you know what makes the torture even more unbearable? Backseat daters. They're exactly what you think. People in your life who cannot keep their opinions on your love life to themselves. My most recent experience with a backseat dater came from an unexpected and highly unsolicited source, a close friend's boyfriend. We were chatting about my experiences in the worst dating pool to ever exist, men in their mid to late 20s in New York City, and he said that my current lack of a partner was due to my standing in my own way. He called me too picky. It was a conversational record scratch. Huh? Aside from being a selective eater as a kid, I'd never considered myself picky. In fact, my ability to go with the flow was a source of pride. I'll eat at any restaurant and tag along on all sorts of plans. Yes, I've embarked on several first dates recently that fizzled, but not because I was icked out by them mansplaining Dune to me or asking if my grandparents are still alive. They're not. I just didn't feel anything. But, as any anxious person will understand, I began to doubt myself. Had I been turning these guys down too quickly in search of that elusive someone better? Was I being delulu for expecting someone to give me butterflies? Was I too picky? For starters, we should do away with the term because it has such negative connotations, says Erica Etten, a dating coach, founder of A Little Nudge, and author of Love at First Sight. I never use the word picky. I prefer selective. According to Lily Womble, a dating coach, founder and CEO of Date Brazen, and author of Thank You More, Please, the word isn't just negative, it's archaic. The concept of you're too picky is born in the patriarchy, she says. It makes it seem like women are the problem for not accepting men as they are, say, 30 years old with only one pillow. It's in society's best interest to pressure women to settle, to want less, because wanting more challenges structures of power. The word picky, Womble concludes, vilifies women for daring to have a preference. How can I not have preferences when heterosexual dating feels so lopsided right now? Marcia Inhorn, PhD, a medical anthropologist, notes in her 2023 book, Motherhood on Ice, that many women are freezing their eggs because their partners or past partners have shown a lack of maturity, stability, and support for starting a family. And a 2023 survey showed that college-educated women aren't dating because they can't find someone who meets their expectations. I don't think men are held to the same standards that women are in dating now, Womble says, as one friend puts it. I'm so comfortable and fulfilled being single. Anyone I date is actually competing with that sense of peace I have when I'm alone. And yet, even knowing all the above to be true, I still feel like a failure when I come home drained from another mediocre date, like I've gotten in my own way, as the backseat dater told me. Turns out that research shows there's an area of the brain that actually clocks that failure and makes us want to give up. Kira Bobinet, MD, a physician and author of Unstoppable Brain, explains that the habenula, a structure in the midbrain, activates because of failure signals, including disappointment, frustration, discouragement, and demoralization. Once this area is turned on, it kills your motivation to keep trying that thing, Bobinet says. So, swiping through gym selfies on dating apps and fake smiling through bad dates literally makes my brain want to give up the search. If you have a narrative that you've tried and tried but nothing has worked, that self-talk will trigger the habenula, Bobinet says. If it turns on and you lose your motivation, it can also cause depression, anxiety, and addiction. Yikes! Maybe, for the sake of my mental health, I do need to be more open-minded and optimistic. And, practically speaking, Etten says this will also ensure that I don't accidentally rule anyone out. I think everyone has this type in their head. People who they think they should be with based on familiarity, societal pressures, family pressures, she says. Did they go to the right school? Do they have a fitting job? Are they the proper religion? She also reminds me that 6 feet tall is not really that attainable of a trait. That's around 14% of men in the U.S., says Etten. Do you really want to exclude 86% of the population? I don't think so. Wombo calls those classic check boxes logistical preferences and says they're a fine starting point, but she uses them to get to something better. Essence-based preferences. How do you want to feel in the presence of someone 6 feet tall? She says. For most of her clients, the answer is confident and enveloped. And they end up realizing that has nothing to do with height or religion, adds Etten. You should be asking how someone makes you feel, if they respect you, and whether you feel attractive in this person's presence. I've realized that I'm looking for someone who gives off warm energy, and I definitely didn't get that from my recent streak of bad dates. So I was right to move on from them. I've since gone on several dates with someone who gives me the good kind of butterflies. They do exist. While I don't know what'll happen in the long run, I'm proud that I trusted my instincts enough to not go out with some of those other guys again. I've stayed open to unexpected possibilities. He is under 6 feet tall after all, but ignored other shoulds that didn't serve me. My new motto? Stay curious, but never settle. Over in culture and news, Kirsten Dunst, 41, gets real about anti-aging culture and getting old in Hollywood. The Civil War star says she took a break from acting because she was only offered sad mom roles. And this article is by Kayla Blanton. After starring in The Power of the Dog in 2021, Kirsten Dunst, 41, took a 2-year break from acting. That's because she was only offered sad mom parts, she recently told Mary Claire. There's definitely less good roles for women my age, she added. Still, she refuses to be pressured into joining the anti-aging trends of Botox, filler, and the like, just to fit in or book a job. And for the record, her latest character in Civil War is anything but a sad mom. Dunst's nonconformist tendencies go way back. Before the carrot dangled in front of her was agelessness, it was straighter teeth, or a more innocent-looking appearance. When she starred in Spider-Man, a producer took her to the dentist without warning and suggested she get some cosmetic work done. I was like, no, I like my teeth, she recalled to British GQ. Then, on the red carpet, she was asked to wear lighter colors and appear less goth. I was never that girl. I never did it, she said. Now she's up against the titan of all appearance-related pressures to look young, and she's not budging. I still know to this day I'm not going to screw up my face and look like a freak. You know what I mean? She said to British GQ. I'd rather get old and do good roles. Dunst doesn't envy those who look younger or those who actually are, who are growing up in the age of social media, where the opportunity for comparison is everywhere. I feel great. And they're so worried about their brand, right? She said. It's so weird, even filtering your face and all that stuff. She continued, I don't know. Everyone's got to put their own opinion on you. That's not really up to me to figure out or care about. Most people are projecting something. I have always pretty much been myself, and I think that's maybe confusing people because I can't fake it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Still in culture and news, Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan are launching 2 reality shows. One will see the Duchess of Sussex celebrate the joys of cooking, gardening, entertaining, and friendship. This article is by Rosa Sanchez. Prince Harry and wife Duchess Meghan are getting into the reality television business. Harper's Bazaar has learned that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are launching 2 nonfiction series on Netflix. These will be unscripted, reality-style shows. The first will see the former Suits actress celebrate the joys of cooking, gardening, entertaining, and friendship, the couple said in a statement. It will be produced by Sony Pictures Television's Intellectual Property Corporation, the force behind the D'Amelio Show and Leah Remini Scientology and the Aftermath. Leah Harriton of Selena Plus Chef will be the showrunner, while Michael Steed of Major Projects, including My Next Guest Needs No Introduction, will direct. Meghan will be one of the executive producers via her and Harry's company, Archwell Productions. The second series will follow the world of professional polo, a sport close to Harry's heart and one in which he actively participates himself. It will capture players performing at the highest level as well as the social scene surrounding the sport. This show will be produced by Boardwalk Pictures, the production company behind Chef's Table, Pepsi, Where's My Jet, and Sex, Love, and Goop. Milos Balak, who worked on FX Welcome to Wrexham, starring Wrexham AFC co-owners Rob McKennelly and Ryan Reynolds, will serve as showrunner. Harry and Meghan will again serve as executive producers via their company. The two projects, currently in the early stages of production, form part of the mega deal the royal couple signed with Netflix in 2020, and which saw the release of their documentary Harry and Meghan. The pair, now based in Montecito, California, also have various other projects in the works, including Meghan's new lifestyle brand, American Riviera Orchard, which will sell everything from organic fruit, jams, to jewelry and cookbooks. As far as their TV projects go, the Sussexes are also set to adapt New York Times best-selling romantic novel Meet Me at the Lake into a Netflix film. Again in culture and news, Rebel Wilson's 75-pound weight loss strategy included intense workouts and trying Ozempic. The Pitch Perfect star is honest about her journey's ups and downs. This article is by Caleb Lanton. Rebel Wilson's year of health spanned 2020, which kicked off her weight loss transformation, and 2024 is a year that's just as monumental. It's the year her memoir, Rebel Rising, debuted on April 2nd. In the book, she details her 75-pound weight loss journey, which includes working out 2 hours a day and trying Ozempic. Wilson set out to lose weight for a variety of reasons that have nothing to do with appearing smaller. She wanted to prioritize her fertility and address her relationship with food as someone who calls herself an emotional eater, she told People. She also adjusted her lifestyle to accommodate her polycystic ovarian syndrome, a hormonal disorder that caused her to gain a significant amount of weight, she told E! News in 2020. In fact, she told People that she was always a proud fat female. She just held a lot of shame attached to her eating behavior, she said. I wasn't hating myself. I was only hating those shameful behaviors, she explained. For example, eating a whole tub of ice cream every night and then feeling bad about myself, making myself get up early in the morning and go to the gym for an hour and a half, and running on that treadmill until sometimes my back would hurt. At the height of her health journey, Wilson said she worked out with her trainer, Jono Castano, 7 days a week. Workouts included hiking, walking, and even tire flipping. In Rebel Rising, she says that nowadays a workout looks like this. Exercise for about 2 hours, 1 hour with a trainer focused on strength and conditioning, and 1 hour doing my own cardio, which was usually walking, she writes per Women's Health. Before embarking on her year of health, Wilson told People that she ate upwards of 3,000 calories most days. And because they were normally carbs, I would still be hungry, she said. So, I've really changed to eating a high-protein diet, which is challenging because I didn't used to eat a lot of meat. I eat fish, salmon, and chicken breast. Although Wilson certainly changed her habits to meet her goals, she recently told the Sunday Times that she's not against medications like Ozempic, a type 2 diabetes drug sometimes used off-label due to its main active ingredient, semaglutide, which has known weight loss side effects. In fact, she told the outlet she tried it herself, but no longer uses it. Someone like me could have a bottomless appetite for sweets, so I think those drugs can be good, she said. Still, she doesn't condone the weight loss obsessive culture. I feel strongly that young women shouldn't try to obsess over looking like Victoria's Secret models. They should just look like themselves, she said. In the last 4 years, if taught Wilson anything, it's that the answer to weight loss is no magic pill or some sick special diet or exercise regime or whatever, she told People. It's literally about working at a healthier way to deal with your emotions, and there's no magic solution. That's the message she hopes her book will get across. Maybe me telling my story might encourage people to do the same and make healthy change in their lives, she said. Since getting engaged to Ramona, At Gruma last year, Wilson admitted that she's embraced the lack of that balance. I have been eating whatever. I have been eating some junk food on set, because sets are prevalent with that. I just haven't even thought about it. So I put on 20 pounds in the last 6 months with that insane schedule. Weight fluctuations are a normal part of life and something many people experience. And Wilson has been honest with followers about her own. Since she initially met her goal weight in 2020, there have been highs and lows. In January, for example, she shared a hot tub selfie to tell fans that the stress of work and writing her book led her to gain 30 pounds. In addition to her new relationship, she became a mom in November 2022, which has made it more difficult to focus on healthy habits. I think once this press tour is over for the book, I'll just go back to a bit more of a normal schedule and working out how I can be a mom and also take an hour or two in my day to be healthy, she told People. And there is a book accompanying this article that Rebel wrote. It's called Rebel Rising, a Memoir. It's $21 at Amazon and $27 at Walmart. Parts of this article were edited due to time. Here's an addictive book, it says, The Secret History by Donna Tartt, T-A-R-T-T. You knew we'd start here with the gang of classic students at a Vermont college, Bennington, right? Combining psychological thriller, campus satire, and Greek tragedy, their story begins with a murder whose details take forever to emerge, the kind of forever that dazzles with insight and cleverness on every page. So The Secret History can be bought for $8 at Amazon, $16 at bookshop.org. And we have Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid, R-E-I-D. So sharp it almost hurts, this comedy of manners is the story of a black nanny in Philadelphia and her privileged employers who obviously, definitely, could not possibly be racist. So smart about social media and regular media and female friendship, this book disappears faster than a bag of potato chips. $10 at Amazon, $15 at bookshop.org, and $11 at Walmart. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Again, that's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that's 919-832-5138. So long until next time.